So my next presentation is called Kabaibai Oka Wahui. Aehe Kabaibai Oka Ane. So Waibai we've heard many times today on wealth or riches. Wahui is nation. So this is the riches of the nation. Where is the water of Kane? And again, no relationships to disclose and no financial relationships. Aehe Oka Kawiki I Kabae Ole. Kawiki was defeated for the lack of water. And here is what we were just talking about. Actually, this is looking out. This is Waikiki. Not the Waikiki that we know now, but you can see this is Le'ahi or Diamond Head in the background. And all of this is Kalo. And this is actually, I think, up in Monolua Valley, which is still on Oahu, but showing that you have an esteem. This is these are all Kane. The first one wasn't, but this is our Kane waters. Okay, so what are we gonna, we're gonna learn about traditional Kanaka Maoli knowledge and practice related to water, and the relationship between water and Kanaka Maoli health. But these are also other Kane waters. So what is the traditional concepts of water? Well, both Dr. Miike and Auntie Betty talked about this, but let's talk a little bit more about Kane and Kanaloa. And Kanaloa is actually also Tangaloa for people who are familiar with the Pacific. Tangaloa, a god throughout, found throughout the Pacific, a god of, well, throughout the Polynesian Pacific, a god of the ocean. So who is Kane? Kane, or is, was, is a god of fresh water, of tapped freshwater streams, of the forests, of the northern edge of the ecliptic, which is a word that I have learned before. Ecliptic is the eclipse. And also of the east. And Kanaloa, the god of the oceans, he found freshwater streams, the southern edge of the ecliptic, and the west. And Kanaloa actually is an island as well. Does anyone know what island Kanaloa is? Kanaloa is Kaho'olawe. Kekohe Ma'alamalama o Kanaloa is Kaho'olawe. And in Hawaiian thinking, there's a lot of dualities, and gender is not quite as fixed as it is in Western thinking. So that even though Kanaloa is traditionally portrayed as a male god, in Kekohe Ma'alamalama o Kanaloa, it actually refers to Kanaloa's female aspect. So what are the types of vai? Well, you probably didn't think there was actually many, many different types of water, and in fact, we had names for all of these. So vai was the external vegetation or water caught in vegetation. There were actually five types: vai apo, vai pua, vai puolo, vai hili, and vai ko'olihilihi. And what about the internal vai? That's such as found in coconut water, sap, tears, or amniotic fluid, five types. Vae, vai koholihiri again, and lapa vai. I don't have all the names, I'm sorry. I should say, I want to thank, this is both, I worked on this with Momi Fernandez as well, so this is, a lot of this comes from her. What about the vai from the atmosphere, heavy mist or fog? In fact, my, that's uhi vai. My daughter's name is, well, the short part of her name is Tonoi Lani, and Tonoi, noi is the mist. So, when Auntie Betty talked about kauna, whenever you hear kanoi or noi in a song, it usually has to do something with sex. Something with sex. The coldness, the mist, it has to do with making love, not necessarily just the surface meaning, right? About the, how beautiful the vegetation is and things like that. What about the subterranean cave, water oozing from a precipice, or deep basin water, two types, vaihi and moanaliha. Okay, surface water, spring, stream, pool, lava or waterfall, such as Dr. Miike was talking about, 13 types. Now, you know, there was an apocryphal story about how many types of snow that the Inuit people had, and actually I think this was actually made up. But you can see from our culture that water is key. Water is key. And this is, we're talking about only vai. We're not talking about kai or the fine. So here, Punavai, Vaihuhu, Vaikai, Vaiapu, Vaiaka, Kanavai, Vaikahe, Vaiko, Vailele, Vaiholomoku, Mulivai, Mulivaiopele, Mulivaiolena. What about the spirit? Well, spirit literally in Hawaiian is Vailua, Vailua. A place with water. What about Hawaii Island, including the grain in the stone? Vaiapele, Vaiau, Vaihai, Vaipohaku. And of course, if we say Ovai, we don't say, in Hawaiian, you don't say who are you? You say, who is your name? That is, who are you named after? Who is your family? Because it's only through these relationships that we can really know each other. So we say, Ovai koe noa. We don't say, Ovai oi. I mean, if you say that, it's pretty rude. I don't know, Auntie Betty, you could correct me, but my understanding is it's pretty rude to say, Ovai oi.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay, so we say, who, what, who are you? Generations of who are you? Ohana, or family. Because, of course, our names, like my name doesn't, Kavika is just actually David, but my middle names reflect who I'm named after and the generations who I connect to. And one of them is actually from the 18th century. But for other people, they connect much farther, they would know much farther back from that. So really, who are you reflects the generation. So people know where you come from and they can trust you. And this is another by Kane, water of Kane. That's the mist. So water and health. Well, we talked about this, but the health of the animate and inanimate world are intimately linked through genealogy. That is, it's not just meteorology. It's not just that, you know, we were so dependent upon the water in the old days, just as we are today. But literally, we had one of the Pohaku said kuleana. It said responsibility. We had the kuleana to care for the water, just as the kuleana had the water had the kuleana to care for us, the responsibility to care for us. Through the mediation of the akua, the gods, and aumakua, our family gods, that these relationships were knit through all of reality, that the concept of mana, or energy flowing through, that all these relationships created an intersections of rights and responsibilities, of cross-cutting obligations, which really formed through the kapu system a resource management system. That is, that the kapu system, which a lot of people say, oh, you know, kapu means no trespassing. It doesn't. It means resource management. And it was very, when we talked about the fish pond, the local the fish ponds, we talk about the alwai, the ditches, the management of those is through the kapu system. And that respected the seasonality of the stream life or the fishes, of needing to preserve the fish or the other ocean life when they were spawning, and of not polluting the rivers and things like that. And of course, as Dr. Mike talked, also preserving stream flows and water quality. And he talked a lot about endemic and indigenous flora and fauna. Also about traditional agriculture and aquaculture, but key is the reef ecosystems. That is that all the reefs depend upon the flow of water and nutrients down from the mountains for their life. And we know that when Kaneohe Bay, when the water was restored into Waiahole and Waikane, from that water used to flow, all that water used to flow to the Ewa Plain for sugar, when that water was restored, the reefs have started to come back to some degree. Of course, we can't reverse some of these effects of climate change. I mean, that's an effect that we don't have any way of reversing at the present. But we do know that restoring the stream flow, because it's not just the flow of the fresh water, but it's the nutrients. And it's also the when we talk about the o'opu and the opai, the fish and the crustaceans that come down, when the young come down, that's part of the food chain for the nearshore fishes and other marine life. Also, water is traditional medicine, which is the next slide. Water in la'au la'au, or water in traditional medicine. Well, cave water was used in life or death situations. And it's important that, I just want to kind of put a big footnote here that none of this was in isolation. A lot of people think now that, oh, you can just use the water and, you know, you'll be miraculously healed, you know, a special kind of water. But it's actually part of a cultural complex. It's part of a whole series of practices. So just drinking Ava by itself, I believe, it's not going to, you know, heal anything. It's drinking Ava in a ceremony. It's drinking Ava within a system of beliefs that ties you in. And, you know, for some people, it's not necessarily that you have the cocoa, not necessarily that you have the blood of genealogy, but that you have the beliefs, that you are respectful. For other people, it is that, you know, it is the genealogy, but for some people, it's that, you know, you have to be respectful of the system because it's shared. I mean, the Hawaiian culture has always been one of sharing, and the sharing, unfortunately, has been mostly one way for a long time, but we won't get into that. Okay, stream and river water uses ceremonies and also as a foundation with earth, minerals, or ocean water. And Momi told me that unfortunately, most of the stream and river water is not pure enough anymore to use in La'olapa'au. The morning dew from high elevations collected from leaves like such as an imo. Imo is an earth oven. And it can be used to drink with medication or by itself. And finally, spring water mixed with herbs, minerals, or ocean medicine, and can be from freshwater springs found offshore. And this, I'm sure, is found in other areas, but the kupuna, the elders who came before us, knew the locations of upwellings of fresh water, and you can still find these in certain places where you can, if you dive into the ocean, you can scoop up fresh water from the ocean. And this was considered, again, one of these medication, or part of medications, or part of ceremonies. Stream fauna, we talked about this, but here's some pictures. These are both types of a'opu, and here's a opai, or freshwater shrimp. Traditional aquaculture and agriculture, and this is just kind of, Dr. Meike gave you a very good word pictures, but here's a picture. So this is kalo. There's a Hawaii has the most different types of kalo of anywhere in the world because that's what Hawaii specialized, just as though Tahiti specialized in ulu, in the breadfruit, Hawaii specialized in kalo. Unfortunately, a lot of those varieties have been lost. This is the local ia, or fish kalo. This is one of Molokai that's being restored. And this is in Heia, where there is a restored fish pond, and you can see that this would be the makaha, or the gate through which was regulated the passage of fish in and out. And you can see it's a pretty large, these are houses over here, pretty large enclosure. But we talked about this already, but it's a contested terrain. It's been at the center of the political economy. First of all, of course, in traditional customary uses. Second of all, in plantations, and finally now in development. Now if you come to Oahu and you drive out to the leeward coast, although that didn't used to be an arid region, before the forests were cut down for development, it a long time was a very arid region. It still is a fairly dry region, but a lot of the green that you see there is from water taken from the windward side. That a lot of the water there is not from that side. And so a lot of people were very suspicious of the agriculture that was being done by the big firms on the Ewa Plain, because that started to be land banking or water banking that water. That is, people are given short-term agricultural leases, and by short-term I mean about 10 years or so, which isn't enough time to really put in serious crops, and that water instead is being reserved for use for development of houses and things like that.
If you change the use, your permit is invalid. So that's what they still get. They can do, but they can't do.
Now, for litigation, we know that Dr. Meike said waters are public trust. We had during the Waiaʻole ditch litigation, we learned that about the State Water Resource Trust, and he was talking about the Lai Ha, which is the East Maui kalo farmers asserting their rights, traditional and customary rights to water. And you can see here, this is the ditch we were talking about, taking water from the windward side over to the leeward side. And this is from Wai'ole Waipane, and this I think was from the Waiahapa. Conclusions. We have an extraordinary range of knowledge and practices relating to both Waiahapa and traditional culture, and was and is and will be central to the health of the Kanaka non-native Waiahapa. That's all I have. Throw it open to questions.
I may be the only one ignorant of this, but what actually is kalo?
Oh, kalo is peril. It's the quorum, kolisia. I forget the exact the term, but actually you can find kalo, taro, across in Africa and in the Caribbean. And in the Caribbean, actually, I think it was brought from Polynesia together with the breadfruit. But it's a starchy corm. A corm is not like a potato. You could sort of think of it as potato, but it's really not. It's kind of, it's not really the root. It's a, I don't know, how do you just?
You're doing very well.
It's a plant that's kind of shaped like this, kind of shaped like that. It has, let's see if we can go up. So these are the leaves. The part you can eat, you can't see. It's beneath the ground. The starch is actually hypoallergenic, very low glycemic index. It's one of the best starches that you could eat. In fact, we feed it, my youngest daughter, that's her first food. That was her first solid food, because it's very easy to digest, and it's good for, you know, people with diabetes, because they won't raise their glucose. It's really a perfect food, unfortunately, and actually can be grown dry land as well. It can be grown, it still needs water, but it doesn't necessarily have to be grown in the, like this. It can be grown dry land. There's different varieties that can be grown like that. And you can use every part of the plant. Lu'au, which is a kind of a stew made with the leaves, and you can use the corn. It's also used in medication as well, and it's found in Africa as well. I'm not certain where it was first domesticated, according to Western.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions?
So worried about the biofield thing. What do you think?
Well, the problem, I think, as Dr. Meike pointed out, is that it's a monocrop. It's a monocrop, and the palm oil, which I think is what's being proposed, is not a good plant for Hawaii. You know, it's another species which, if it got, which, you know, it requires a lot of water. It's single crop, and really, if we're talking about, you know, people already use bagasse, which is maybe a little bit better because you can use another, you know, there's another use for that. But really, I mean, if we're thinking about alternative fuels, I mean, sunlight, which we have in Hawaii almost 365 days a year, we have ocean power, we have wind power. Geothermal I don't like, because I don't believe that we should be tapping into the body pele, but you know, we have at least three really good alternative fuels which don't create any more carbon, because even though it's a biofuel, burning it is still, anytime you combust anything, you're increasing the carbon load. Any other questions?
If climate change continues and we warm up a lot,
well, we know that a lot of Waikiki is going to be underwater, at a minimum. And, you know, it's going to have major effects, obviously, on the tourism industry. The shifts will definitely be about, you know, whether, what we're going to be able to grow. I mean, we're dependent upon, except for the surface waters, of course, but the underground waters are a very thin lens of water which sits on top of ocean water, basically. It's a lens of water. Now, with a higher water table, we have the threat of inundation of that water, and you know, already in some places we're really stretching the limits of how much water we have to sustain the kind of development that people are planning. So I think there's going to be major effects, not to speak about what it would do for agriculture.
I think we're vulnerable here myself, because global warming changes rain patterns, and we're totally dependent on rain patterns, and our models can't bring the trigger winds that come. if you look at the typical mountain ranges in Hawaii, you want the windward side to be straight up and down. That's because they've been eroded to the impervious rock. But if you drill in there and take a piece of rock out and let it drain out and throw it on the water, it would float until it sinks, because it's so porous that there's a lot of water in those mountains. That's what feeds those Wyoming streams, and that's what feeds the streams of Maui in the early, at the airports. But so rain pattern, we could be in really big trouble.
Yeah, I used to live in Hawaii, but I left some years ago, but I still love Hawaii. And I was back recently, and we went up Waimea Canyon, and I was surprised they were saying, you couldn't even swim in the pool up there because there was so little water coming down, and what was coming down was polluted by the cattle, and that the pool of Waimea Valley was, full of bacteria and that kind of stuff. I didn't know there was ranching or whatever up there, but I guess I was wondering, is there a way, the watershed area is so lovely, it's so wonderful in Hawaii. Is there a way that we can start expanding that and help kind of revitalizing some of the streams up in the mountains? I don't know, maybe a dumb question.
No, I think one of the things that, it's not really, you might know more than me definitely, but one of the things that I've always thought about is, one of the ways that we actually traditionally controlled climate was through planting. And if you look at, you read Lili Okalani, she talks about the ulu or the breadfruit forest, which actually were able to draw down the clouds to a lower level and so that there could be more moisture, and that moisture would allow, of course, agriculture. And if you look at what's being done now, it's not that. It's not looking at biological means of climate, of creating what we call microclimates, so that there could be more diversity, definitely more types of agriculture practice or more types of gathering.
Along that line, there have been studies on Marae, for example. Even though those buffalo pines are not native, they actually draw a lot of water down. I've been told once when I was in Kaualapi, you think that Kaualapi is so dry because it's leeward of Maui, but people say that, once upon a time, Haleakala Kalau was covered with trees, and when they were covered with trees, there was a lot more moisture, and people believe that the moisture then came all the way down to Kaualapi. Now you look up there and it's there.
Yes, it's just
like you talked about the Apple Plain. Waimea on the Big Island, that used to be all forest. We had all those wild things that look like stubble. Those are all forests.
Yeah.
But we can't go back to those days. You could, people like the Nature Conservancy, et cetera, are trying to expand stuff, so I think that, and getting back to the biofuels thing, unfortunately, anything that's economically viable is going to take up a lot of land, it's going to be a monoculture crop, so you're going to use a lot of points that are going to be monoculture. You want renewable energy sources. He's mentioned some. When the ocean waves, people wanted to do something on Molokai, people like said, not here. Yeah, so anything big will always cause conflict.
Resource being exploited for common, and I'm not very pro-capitalism myself, so I don't think ecologically it's making a whole lot of difference, although you can certainly say that whenever you're changing the client, whenever you're changing the different levels from a very cold to a very warm, if you're not, you know, returning the water at the same temperature, you're creating some disruption that I don't know. Do you have anything?
You mentioned one thing about Hawaiians should be aware of their freshwater irrigation.
Yeah.
I've seen some, I think it's infrared satellite photographs of the corner coast. And what they are, lava tubes with so much water going through them. And actually, the scuba divers know where those are because they go up those lava tubes. But I've seen infrared photographs that show you where the fresh water is running up off the coast of the corner.
You can see it even when you snorkel with the change. Mm-hmm. Look at that. That wavy thing,
yeah.
That's your fresh water coming in.
It's
pretty amazing.
Did you have another question, sir?
About child rearing practices, comparison between traditional child rearing practices and how, if you restored that, it might be a beginning towards improving self-esteem.
Sure. We know that, just like with other times, the emergence of the nuclear family as opposed to the extended family is certainly. Now, something I think that to some degree we still have that, the ohana, we still have the extended family, but to a large degree I think it has broken down. And you know, the whole thing, I mean, the village, it takes a village to raise a child, it actually was that. I mean, there were many practices called, that you might translate as adoption. It really wasn't necessarily adoption, but there was many cases where, you know, the family really would take care. That there was much more sharing of resources, but you know, the nuclear family and the modern economy are not necessarily always suitable for that those practices. But I think that you're and that's a really good suggestion.
So a connection might be the built environment. But if you build houses that value nuclear families instead of units that value community. Is there any movement in that direction?
Not yet, although on Molokai, for example, Walter Reddy's mother wanted to build what's called Kauhale style. Kauhale means multiple dwellings instead of one main house, and that's certainly behind that. I mean, there was very specific uses for certain dwellings, like, you know, there's a division of traditionally between the sexes, and that's not practiced as much anymore, but pretty much not. But certainly the idea of multiple dwellings for one, so that generations of a family could live in one place, is a good idea. In the past, it's not usually, because real estate is so expensive, it's not usually so much in the present, but it's certainly a good idea.
Anything else that makes you really revealing
Thank you very much. Please join me in a warm thank you to both Dr. Snieke and Dr. Liu and the